current events and relate what we've just been discussing to those incidents, because this is becoming ever more dangerous. We forget, because it's not in the headlines, that we still have the NDAA. We do still have the prospect of indefinite detention, and we do see through the life and death of Herman Wallace, the likes of Herman Wallace, and of course many other political prisoners that then are kidding when they say that they can lock you up indefinitely. And yes, indeed, America does torture its prisoners. So there's a meeting going on at Bali right now where the Trans-Pacific Trade Pact is being bandied about. President Obama is not there. That could be either a good thing or a bad thing. But nonetheless, it certainly would change everything. And let's not forget that the Supreme Court is going to be on the rampage very soon, turning over many of the laws that we thought were precedent and therefore established. This has been Air Cascadia for Monday, October 7th, 2013. Sam Parrish engineered the show today. Thanks so much, Sam. Kathleen Stevenson, the KBOO AM News and Public Affairs Director. I'm Chris Andre. Get the facts, know your rights, take a stand. Thanks for listening and stay tuned.
Possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Wilkin & Company, PC, Certified Public Accountants, helping businesses, individuals, and nonprofit organizations make financial decisions based on their personal values since 1987. Wilkin & Company is located at 2435 Southwest 5th Avenue in Portland. Information at 503-225-1359 or WilkinCPAS.com. This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation.
Good morning and welcome to Locus Focus. I'm Barbara Bernstein, your host for this weekly conversation about our place on the planet. An effort is underfoot to wrest control of Portland's bureaus of water and environmental services from the Portland City Council and transfer them to an obscure board lacking transparency and accountability. My guests this morning are two Portland environmental activists, Mike Houck and Bob Salinger, who tell us why they believe this initiative could undermine Portland's significant environmental programs. Mike Houck directs the Urban Green Spaces Institute and is co-editor of Wild in the City, a guide to Portland's natural areas, and Wild in the City, Exploring the Intertwine. Bob Salinger is a conservation director at Audubon Society of Portland. Mike and Bob, welcome back to Locus Focus.
Thank you. Thanks. Great to be here.
It's good to have you back. And I think it might be good to start out by reminding people of your environmental activist creds, because this campaign that you've been taking on to stop this initiative that would basically privatize, privatize the two bureaus, water and Bureau of Environmental Services, and that you've been taking a lot of flack from other environmental activists in the city. Is that correct?
I'd say we haven't been taking flack from environmental advocates. The environmental community is strongly united against this measure. So there are some folks that suggest that we are apologists for the city. I think we're very far from that. We have a long history of challenging the city when necessary. I think of things like Superfund, West Hayden Island, River Plan. We have decades, really, of fighting the city when necessary and also working with it when possible.
I also recollect a couple times with both of you being on commissions that you have, stormed off because you felt like you were not being heard.
I think I'm the only one that's done that.
Okay.
I did that with Hayden Island. It was a time when we felt that the city was trying to push something through without really listening to the public, and we fought back, and we're effective. The city backed down, and I think has had a much better process since that time. That was about a year ago that we walked off of that committee.
So I won't go into any detail, but I will say, this is Mike Houck, that my involvement with the city goes back 43 years when I was a grad student at PSU, and the city wanted to fill Oaks Bottom in to put a bunch of museums and so forth. So again, yeah, I'll kick butt on the city when I need to, but obviously it makes sense to be collaborative as well and get stuff done.
And actually, my appearance from the appearance that I see, that both the work that both of you guys have done over the last 43 years has really transformed the city and its agencies from, like, well, we used to have basically a Bureau of Sewers, whatever they called it in those days, but it was a sewer department, and now it's Bureau of Environmental Services. And I would say that is somewhat in part because of the work that you and other people like you have been doing for the last four decades.
Absolutely, and I take great pride in that. In fact, that is the single most important issue here. We're talking about taking a bureau that's gone from moving sewage around in pipes to integrating nature, green infrastructure with the pipes, with the gray infrastructure in a very creative way, innovative way that actually saves ratepayers money. So that is... there's a direct frontal attack on that and other environmental programs through this initiative.
Well, before we get into what this initiative is all about, I want to talk about why the Bureau of Environmental Services and the Water Bureau are so vulnerable to citizen attack. The Oregonian has written endless copy about all the waste, the financial waste, particularly in the Water Bureau, but I guess they also think that things like bike paths and swales are not any business of the Bureau of Environmental Services. So they've kind of fed into this anger. And there's also a lot of, we could call it, populist anger against these two bureaus. So let's talk about what that is, and in any ways, is it justified?
Yeah, it's interesting. I think there is a lot of populist anger out there right now, and it's very easy to feed off of that. And it's easy to feed off of that in very destructive ways. I think people are frustrated with government at all different levels. One of the things I find really ironic is that the focus is so much on the Water Bureau and BES, when in fact we have bureaus that are far more problematic. Pure Owned Development Commission, for example, that really has done the bidding for big industry for a very long time. Things like the Port of Portland that do not answer to the public, that are appointed by the governor. There's a lot of places to look. It's interesting that we focused in on the Water Bureau and BES in the way that we have. But, I think the thing to understand is that you need to break these things down into their constituent parts and look at the different issues that are being raised, because there's a lot of just generalized anger, non-discriminate anger, and that's what's driving this right now. The Oregonian, unfortunately, feeds into it. The Oregonian loves to bash government. That's what the Oregonian does. And so we've seen a lot of, I think, very uninformed articles and editorials over the last couple of years. But I think the most important thing to understand is that there has been a campaign over the last couple of years by big industry to attack these two bureaus. And a lot of what the public believes to be true is actually industry rhetoric that has been put forward. And by that, I'm talking about a lawsuit that came out a couple of years ago, put forward by one of the primary proponents of this initiative, that accused the city of all kinds of illegal activity with the two bureaus, using the rates for illegal uses. In that lawsuit, they attacked virtually every single environmental program in the city. The Oregonian ran lots of headlines saying illegal activity at the bureau. That's not what was found. What has happened is there's a lawsuit. It hasn't been resolved yet. We believe that many of the activities that were accused of being illegal are actually perfectly legal and very consistent with the rates.
Well, actually, I want to kind of sort through, because I'm thinking some of the scandals, if you want to call it, in the Water Bureau go back to the days of Eric Sten and that wonderful computer system that the Water Bureau hired, or whatever you do with computer systems, and that it was like not billing people for 2 years and then billing other people hundreds of thousands of dollars. So that was the first time that I'm aware, well, not the first time, but it was like one of the more recent times when the Water Bureau came under attack. There's been a lot of other issues since then that have made the Water Bureau unpopular. Things like going ahead with plans to cap the reservoirs and basically close the reservoirs in Washington Park and Mount Tabor and have these new reservoirs at Powell Butte and I guess some other places. And some issues around the direction of the Water Bureau under David Chaff, who seemed really kind of gleeful because he was on my show announcing one time that the EPA had declined Portland's request to be to have a waiver for both the cap open reservoirs and filtration plant. And he seemed to kind of be kind of gleeful that, well, he's off the hook because the feds are now saying that we don't have to do these things. So I think that that kind of, those kinds of actions have made the Water Bureau pretty unpopular amongst a lot of people. So I want to separate that and I talk about some of the issues that the Water Bureau really has. And I'm not aware of the same kind of issues at BES, but maybe there are a couple other things there where they have maybe crossed the line. And then separate that from the programs that they're doing, which really need to be supported.
Yeah, I mean, I think that is important because we are talking about two different bureaus here and they've been lumped together. I certainly would not you know, justify a lot of the expenses that the Water Bureau has incurred. They've done some foolish things that I disagree with. I think the way to deal with that is to challenge them directly and get involved. When it comes to the reservoirs, they're following an EPA mandate. The city did successfully challenge the filtration plant, the covering of the reservoirs. They were unsuccessful. No city in the United States has been successful challenging that. The only city that was able to get a delay was New York, and that was a reservoir that's outside the city and is protected by armed guards. So, you know, you can certainly make the argument that the city should have fought harder, could have done more. But the reality is that no city in the United States has been successful in challenging the EPA on that issue.
I want to also interject a little something about that, because I was like a big advocate of keeping the reservoirs open. But when you're kind of picking your battles and it looked like that was falling by the wayside, one of the arguments is that, you know, water needs to be oxygenated to be, quote, living water. So I was thinking, well, it's nice that the water sits in those reservoirs for a while before we use it, but it's piped 25 miles in closed pipes. So it spends most of its lifetime, once it leaves Bull Run, enclosed. So it seemed like that is not the biggest deal when we're really talking about some environmental issues that we really need to fight.
I think the biggest deal there is probably expense. And Audubon opposed covering the reservoirs. We were opponents of that. So, you know, we agree that, you know, that needs to be looked at carefully. But the reality is that the city did try and challenge it and lost. Perhaps there's more that they could do. The Water Bureau also had some foolish expenditures as well. Things like the Water House, things like the Rose Festival headquarters. There are things that I absolutely disagree with that I think it's fine to challenge. I think the question becomes, though, how do you challenge that? Do you simply blow up the system, or do you try and affect real change? One of the things that really troubles me about this initiative is that proponents have joined with big industry. One of the arguments with the Water Bureau is that it's in the hands of big corporate influences, that there are all these consultants and corporations that are in industry that are influencing the Water Bureau. And, you know, from my perspective, the folks that are pushing this initiative have joined with exactly those big industries that we're so concerned about. And a good analogy in my mind would be, for example, we're concerned about the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and their lack of protection for the spotted owl. Our approach to that would not be to then join with the forest industry to undermine the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. If you're concerned about global warming and think the federal government could do more, the obvious solution is not to then join with the coal industry to punish the federal government. But that's what this measure is really about. It's joining with big industry to take these bureaus, $15 billion worth of infrastructure away from the city. What we needed to be doing is reforming the problems that exist and protecting the good things that are happening.
Well, I'd like to interject that the amazing thing here is that the corporate polluters, some of the worst polluters in the city, have managed to hide behind the aura of volunteers who are allegedly trying to protect the water supply. So they formed this unholy alliance. People in a meeting I was at recently described it as a wonderful bridge between these two opposing forces, when in fact it's a marriage of convenience.
Well, before we get into the specifics of the initiative, I wanted to talk a little bit more about like what BES does. And before that, I want to remind people, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to Locus Focus here on KBOO Community Radio. My guests this morning are Mike Houck with the Urban Green Spaces Institute and Bob Salinger, who is the Conservation Director at Audubon Society of Portland. And we're talking about an initiative afoot that would basically privatize Portland's bureaus of water and environmental services. So let's talk a little bit more about what the Bureau of Environmental Services does, because people, I still think probably the one thing they know it's been doing is the big pipe, and a lot of people don't like that. And they don't like the streets being torn up, and they just kind of go, oh, BES this and BES that.
Right.
But on the other hand, there's people who go walking in Oaks Bottom every day or every week who really enjoy that. And then to push it a little further, there's a lot of people who've been in Oaks Bottom this summer marveling at those beautiful purple flowers, learning that, in fact, people are learning that they are really a very noxious weed. And my understanding is that BES was going to help fund to get rid of the purple loosestrife in Oaks Bottom. And because of all this hoopla, that's become a back burner issue. So what does BES really do?
Well, actually, it's a case in point that makes Bob's point, and that is, you know, back in the early 80s to late 80s, BES was not really implementing what I would consider true watershed management to improve water quality across the board within the city of Portland. So a number of us activists got together with the commissioner at the time, Bob Koch. I don't know how many people remember
Bob Koch,
and actually rewrote the mission for the Bureau of Environmental Services that took it from being strictly a sewage bureau to a watershed health bureau. And that's been an evolution over time.
I'm curious, wasn't Bob Koch one of the most conservative members of the city council at
yes.
that time? He became a city council member when we annexed East County, basically. So he was the voice of East County.
Yeah, he went from being a cop to being a city
sort of reminded me a little bit, minus the murderous implications of Dan White. He was like the Dan
yeah.
White of,
well,
but fortunately,
I'm not going to go there.
He didn't kill anybody, which is good.
I'm not going to go there. And actually, I will give him credit that he jumped in on the era when we were trying to clean up the Columbia Slough and was supportive of that and supportive of the Bureau of Environmental Services having a broader mission. And so we've seen over 25 years now, and this is where Bob's point comes into view. I was not pleased at all with where BES was 25, 30 years ago. Okay, well, one way to approach that would be to sue the bastards or to change the entire city structure, take it away from the city, or to get in the trenches, work with the Bureau, work with their staff, work with other advocates. And by doing that over the last 30 years, the Bureau has moved dramatically in the direction of integrating natural systems with the gray infrastructure to the point that there are examples, for example, Tabor to the River. The city has documented that if it just went in and replaced the 100-year-old pipes, and let's face it, the pipes are aging within the city of Portland. They have to be replaced. Question, do you replace them only, or do you integrate bioswales, green streets, increasing the urban forest canopy, do the green stuff along with the gray, which it turns out saves $63 million. So we've moved that bureau, both due to internal influence and external influence from advocates, to being truly an environmental bureau. This initiative attacks every one of those green programs head on and would disallow any of those efforts, and including efforts like the acquisition of 146 acres at Riverview Cemetery that Metro, Trust for Public Land, Portland Parks, and BES collaborated on, that serves multiple benefits. It protects those headwater areas as well as providing open space for folks in Southwest Portland. All of those are under attack right now through this initiative.
Well, it kind of reminds me of a lot of the ways that Sam Adams was attacked as mayor, because I think he was the first mayor that we had who really understood the holisticness of green infrastructure and city infrastructure. And in fact, I kind of fed him a line once, but he ran with it, which was looking at our streets as tributaries of the Willamette, or I guess not really, yeah. And seeing that the way the water runs off.
They are.
Yeah. And I probably learned that from you, Mike. But anyway, but I really appreciated that Sam got that. And under his leadership, and he was, I think the Bureau of Environmental Services was one of his portfolios when he was mayor, I think they really moved ahead. But the Oregonian was like one of the things they loved to attack Sam for was a lot of the environmental programs.
Two quick points. One is, You made a reference that people are not all that happy with the big pipe. They should be thrilled with the big pipe. The big pipe has removed sewage from the Columbia Slough and Willamette Rivers, and the big pipe came in on budget under time. So it's a spectacular success, but it relies, its long-term success relies on this green infrastructure approach, which takes stormwater and treats it as a valuable resource, not a problem to be gotten rid of, put in the pipes. If we don't do the green stuff, that $1.44 billion investment is going to go away. We'll need a bigger pipe down the road.
So one of those areas that I'm thinking of where there's like this critical habitat for watershed as well as for wildlife, and it feeds right into the Willamette, is the hillside, Riverview Cemetery hillside, and then right across the river where Oaks Bottom is. And that these are two areas that BES has really taken under its wing.
Yeah.
And these are two areas where they're getting severely attacked.
Right.
It is ironic. I mean, it's Bob again. I would just say that, you know, for folks that are concerned about the Water Bureau, they could not find a better example of transformation of a bureau to exactly what they claim they want at BES. That bureau, as Micah said, took 30 years to transform. It's been an iterative process. But it's now at a point where it's moved away from these big mega projects. The big pipe was something it had to do. It got sued. We had over 100 days where raw sewage was in the river. But again, it brought that project in on budget, on time. How many cities can say that they brought in a $1.4 billion project like that on time and on budget? It's an incredible success story. But it's also implementing these incredibly innovative strategies that are community-based, that enhance our neighborhood while also meeting the mission of the Bureau, which includes stormwater. And getting that stormwater out of our sewers and treating it where it falls is incredibly important if we're going to have a healthy, ecologically viable landscape and if we are going to protect the integrity of the big pipe system over the next several decades. So, I mean, I really encourage folks to take a look at that as an example of exactly what we ought to be doing with the Water Bureau. Unfortunately, what this initiative does is it attacks both of those bureaus equally.
Well, I'm thinking about how people still, I think, really don't know what BES does. And so they complain. Like, I have a friend who is a really strong environmentalist, and she lives over off of Division. And it was when the Tabor to the River project was getting started, and I was talking about swales, and she said, I hate swales. They take up parking spaces. So I had to kind of talk her through it. She doesn't hate swales anymore. But I think that people don't like change. And so when all these swales started going in the Richmond neighborhood and down through Brooklyn, people were resistant, unless it was a swale by St. Philip Denary, which is beautiful and been around for a really long time. And this is an example of when you have like an old growth swale and see what it can really do over 20 years. So how do we get people to appreciate why the green stuff is just as important and vital as the gray stuff, and that we need to do all of it?
Well, I will say that the Bureau of Environmental Services, as great a job as they have done generating those programs, have not done as good a job at conveying to the public the information related to the project. So it's a challenge we have. We are helping in that effort. The Intertwined Alliance, I know, is right now producing information that is intended to go out to a broader audience to educate folks about the importance of the green infrastructure. I will tell you, though, that Linda Dobson, a good friend of mine who directs the Innovative Stormwater Program, some time ago started putting in curb extensions on Northeast Siskiyou and other areas in Northeast Portland. And interestingly, adjacent neighborhoods have come to BES begging to have some of those bioswales put in their neighborhood, because not only do they look nice, they're great for traffic calming as well. So I think it's a matter of, as time goes on, people will, through word of mouth, seeing good examples. A classic example that's not, strictly speaking, a water quality project per se, but it definitely is an educational effort, is Tanner Springs Park in the Pearl District. I don't know if
I just finally got over there a few weeks ago, and I felt like, first of all, like, I'd never been to the city before, but it was quite amazing. All the development there is really quite astonishing.
And what's cool about that is that Portland Parks and Recreation and BES collaborated with the Neighborhood Association, created a fake wetland. There's no question about it. The stream is still 30 feet deep.
And you're not pumping the water from the stream to make it.
No, it's circulated. But the point is that it evokes what was there before Portland developed industrially there. And the incredible thing is that at one square block, faux wetland, osprey are diving in catching fish, herons are walking and catching fish maybe 10 feet away from young kids who are observing herons up close in the densest part of the city. So there's a lot of incredibly innovative stuff going on out there that we just need to get the word out to the broader public.
And I would just add, you know, I mean, I think people are incredibly supportive of this stuff. People care tremendously about their trees, their natural areas, protection of natural resources. The city is incredibly committed to that. And we hear from people every day trying to do a better job to protect those things. And oftentimes where we're able to do that is through the Bureau of Environmental Services, working with them, because there's oftentimes a direct nexus with managing stormwater. I think what's happened over the last couple of years is there has been a very aggressive campaign by industrial interests to undermine the credibility of these programs. Unfortunately, our media has bought into it, and increasingly the public's being bought into it. And I think one of the things we really do need to talk about today is who is behind this initiative. Because
and what is the initiative? I want to know what the initiative is going to be, and then we'll talk about who's
it's the initiative. Basically, would take the Bureau of Environmental Services and the Water Bureau away from the city and put them under a 7-member commission that would be elected independently based on school districts. So we would have a new commission that would manage those two bureaus. It would take $15 billion, that's $15 billion with a B, dollars worth of assets away from the city and put them under this new commission. And we have many, many concerns about this initiative. But first and foremost is that it is being backed by industrial interests that have long fought the city on its environmental programs.
And who are some of these industrialists? Yeah, I want to name names now.
Sure, and I'll be happy to name names. Well, let me say one more thing before I get to that. These are groups that have long fought the city on its environmental programs and oftentimes been unsuccessful. And now they're advocating to take the two bureaus, including BES, away from the city and put it under this new obscure commission. And I say obscure because I would challenge your listeners to name a member of the Soil and Water Conservation District, the Port Commission, the School Commission. These kinds of districts, most people don't pay attention to them. Most people don't know who's on them. Most people go down their ballots and just check names, the top name on the list. They're very, very easy to take over. And the same big money interests that are behind this initiative are also likely to be the ones that are able to most manipulate it once it's put in place. So let's talk about some of the people behind this. Kent Crayford is the director of the Industrial Water Users Coalition. Those are the largest water users in the city. They include groups like Precision Cast Parts.
With a great environmental record.
Yeah, just listed as the number one air polluter in the United States. Vigor Industrial, a company that's been advocating for coal trains. Siltronic, a company that has been, is a Superfund PRP, a potentially responsible party, one of the, their lawyer is John DiLorenzo. John DiLorenzo is the guy who fought campaign finance reform in Oregon. In fact, if you go to his website, the article that he has on his own, on his website, his biography page at his law firm, talks about his efforts to defeat campaign finance reform.
He's actually, I think, let's rattle down a few other of his great accomplishments.
Yeah, right now he's representing landlords that are fighting the city's efforts to oppose a discrimination in housing. He tried to pass legislation a couple of years ago to take Columbia River water for big agribusiness in eastern Oregon at bargain basement prices. Not exactly the guy that you want to trust to protect the integrity of government and to protect your water. He has an incredibly long track record. Harry Merlow is another backer of this. People may remember Harry Merlow. He was the head of Louisiana Pacific when it had its big scandal, wound up paying one of the largest fines in Oregon history for trust violations, wound up paying $1 billion to consumers for faulty siding that Louisiana Pacific was selling. One of the big industrial destroyers of our forests.
Donated $25,000.
This is really, and by the way, they're using Mitt Romney's Republican fundraiser to raise funds for this measure. So it's really a who's who of organizations and individuals that I think most people would not want to trust with their natural resource agencies with protecting the integrity of government. And that's what is so ironic, that somehow, you know, these folks are putting forward a measure that is based upon returning integrity to government and taking big industry out of the game. It's a front. and it's something that folks really should be paying a lot more attention to.
So why have people who are, say, involved with Friends of the Reservoirs, why are they involved with this initiative?
Marriage of convenience, as I said earlier. They're pissed off. They're unhappy with the results they've gotten out of the city. And unlike some folks who, you know, I don't get everything I want from city council, trust me, but I'll figure out a way to come back, to use the system, to work within the system to make changes, as opposed to trying to blow it up.
And it's okay to be pissed off at the city. I have no problem with that. I'm pissed off at the city a lot. But again, I would go back to the analogy I used earlier. Just because you think the federal government should do more about global climate change doesn't mean that you would go and join forces with the coal industry to undermine the federal government. Just because you think the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service should do more to protect our ancient forests doesn't mean you would join with the forest industry to attack the Fish and Wildlife Service. What's ironic here is these folks are joining with exactly the bad actors that we're most concerned about to destroy the mechanisms that are most likely to prevent the harm that they would do.
Well, this is reminding me of such a much more dire way is a number of years ago when TriMet was all set to put a light rail through Milwaukee, and people in Milwaukee, a certain group of people in Milwaukee, well, I think it was a combination of people who don't like mass transit and others who didn't like the alignment. So they put it on a statewide ballot. So people in Ontario, Oregon were voting whether we should have, the state should give these funds. And of course, it went down. And now we're going to finally get a light rail to Milwaukee next year, but we could have had it 6 years ago. And in a way, I see, I mean, that's sort of the best worst case scenario. This again, maybe something would turn around after a time, but why waste all these years undoing good work to get to where you realize, oh, I think we should be doing what we're going to do in the first place.
And I want to go back to your earlier comment about backing off on restoration in Oaks Bottom Wildlife Refuge. It's an example of the chilling effect that even if this measure were not to go forward, it's already had a chilling effect on elected officials and on agency directors, that they're reluctant to engage in a lot of these really incredibly important environmental activities for fear that they're going to be taken to task on it. So we need to get ahead of this do a better job of documenting why these green programs belong on the rates, on the sewer rates and the stormwater rates. They are part of the system. The system is not just the Big Pipe or the Columbia Boulevard Treatment Center. The system is trees. It's bioswales. It's protecting headwaters areas. That is part of the system. And that is one of the big challenges I think that we face is educating the public to the fact that just putting water in pipes out of sight, out of mind, is not going to address the environmental issues in the city of Portland, especially as it grows.
Well, I see that people like trees, and I think growing up, people are liking swales. They like parks. People certainly like Oaks Bottom. So how do we connect their like of that to their understanding that this is all part of a larger system?
Well, I think the first thing is to reject this measure because the folks that are backing this have been attacking exactly those things for the last several years. And they brought a lawsuit a couple of years ago, again, that's still in process, where they literally went after the city's tree planting program, its Green Streets program, its Superfund program, its natural resource area acquisitions. Literally every single core environmental program at the city of Portland was put under attack by the very interests that are promoting this initiative. And in their rhetoric so far, what you see is them continuing to attack this. This is a full frontal assault on the city's natural resource programs. And anybody who thinks that this is anything other than that is kidding themselves.
Now, I want to interject one quick thing, though. I know that a lot of your listeners, and we are as well, concerned about social environmental justice issues. One of the other items they have on their hit list is adjusting SDCs to accommodate low-income.
Now, what is SDC?
Systems development charges for water, for sewer water and so forth. They're attacking that as well. In other words, we should not give poor people, low income people, a break on their stormwater rates and water rates.
Yeah, I mean, when people talk about this marriage of convenience, the only group other than big industry that's supporting this right now is Friends of the Reservoirs, and I think it's really important to note that Audubon Society of Portland Urban Green Spaces Institute, Friends of Trees, DPAVE, Oregon Environmental Council, a variety of environmental justice advocates are all opposing this.
Willamette Riverkeeper.
Virtually every single major environmental group in the city of Portland, the folks that have fought for our communities year in and year out, the folks that people call when they want a wetland protected, a tree protected, when they want their air quality, water quality protected, every single one of those groups is opposing this.
Now, what about Food and Water Watch? I'm curious.
Food and Water Watch hasn't taken a position yet that I know of, but the only group other than big industry that's come out in support of this is Friends of the Reservoirs.
Now, the reason why I mentioned Food and Water Watch is that I'm thinking about the alliances around fluoridation campaign and the anti-fluoridation campaign, and Friends of Reservoirs was like a really big leader in fighting fluoridation, and one of the only environmental groups. Well, actually, I think environmental groups are kind of split down the middle around fluoridation, but I know the Food and Water Watch came out against fluoridation. So I'm just kind of curious to see if more groups start to take sides, if we're going to see a similar split along the lines of the fluoridation campaign.
I don't think so. I'd be very surprised. What we're hearing is that most groups are very concerned about this as they've gotten more information. They realize that this is really an anti-environment initiative, that the groups that are really behind this, the big money that's behind this, is exactly what this initiative is pretending to oppose. When you have groups like Siltronic and John DiLorenzo, Harry Merlo, folks like that backing initiative like this, I think most progressive groups are going to stop, take a really hard look, and try and figure out what's going on, because these have not been voices for environmental protection or good government. They have been voices to protect big industry and big industry interests, big money.
So what's
and
the timeline?
I'll make a plug right here, as a matter of fact. I know you have a lot of listeners that do belong to a lot of different nonprofits, NGOs around the city. I would urge those folks to get a hold of us who are concerned about this, because we are hoping to expand the base that of opposition.
So how do they get a hold of you?
They can certainly call me at Audubon or Mike at the Urban Green Spaces Institute. My email is bsalinger with two L's at audubonportland.org. But if they go to our website, www.audubonportland, it's easy to get a hold of us.
And the Green Spaces website is what?
UrbanGreenspaces.org.
Well, and I will do the best I can to get links to your websites on our webpage. We've been having some issues with the KBOO website, and I can't edit things like web links at the moment, but I'm hoping within the next few days to solve that problem. So hopefully go on to Locus Focus website in the next couple of days, and we will have links to at least to Bob and Mike's groups and to other groups that are working. Now, what kind of timeline are we looking at?
Basically, right now, the ballot title is being appealed by both sides, by the city and by the proponents, so that will take some time to work out. The court just had a hearing. Once that's done, they'll need to collect 30,000 signatures to get it on the ballot. We're hoping that doesn't happen. We're hoping people take a close look at this before it gets to the ballot. I think they have to do that by mid-January sometime.
So are they shooting for May, for the May primary election?
It would be on the November ballot.
The November.
That's my understanding.
The medium-sized election.
Right. You know, but people ask, you know, well, why would they be doing this? I mean, some folks say, well, you know, they're just interested in getting their rates down so we can work with them on this. I think a variety of things folks need to be aware of. First of all, these are the city's biggest water users. They are truly the ones that are going to benefit from this. I've been on BES's budget committee for many years. It's interesting. You bring the rates down. The big driver of the rates at BES, for example, is the big pipe. That was an expensive project. Many other cities are now being required to do similar projects, and their rates are shooting by Portland's. It's the cost of having a very old, archaic system that was falling apart. The things that these folks are arguing against, cutting all the environmental programs, will have a minimal impact on your average household. What it really impacts is the rates of the big industrial water users. They're the ones going to benefit economically. So, yeah, they want to get their rates down. But they're also the biggest users of water in the city.
How can they necessarily get their rates down, though? I mean, that's
that's a good question.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. It sort of reminds me of reminds me of many organizations that have this pie in the sky thing of we'll do this, get me in power, or you know, like what Mitt Romney said when he was running for president. I mean, how are they going to really do it?
They're fixed rates. The rates are not going to go down.
Well, it's funny because, you know, I mean, the folks that argue that this should go forward argue that, for example, it would lower rates. Well, there's no guarantee that this new obscure commission will actually lower rates. In fact, you could drive things up. You're going to have an extra layer of government now. For folks that aren't into government, this is an extra layer of government. It's not replacing government. It's adding a new layer. Number two, this new commission will have bonding power for both sewer and water. they can basically order the city to issue bonds. The city has a very good credit rating right now. This is a good way to destroy that credit rating. Number three, we're transferring $15 billion worth of infrastructure to a new commission. Number four, you know, it throws the Superfund process completely into a tailspin because these guys argue that our Superfund role is illegal. So no one knows where the Superfund process would end up, whether it be with this new commission or with city government. So there's a lot of things that could wind up costing the city a lot of money over the long run.
Now, what's happening with their lawsuit? Does that have any look at likelihood of being settled in the near future?
Unfortunately, the folks that brought the lawsuit have been stringing it out, so we'll see if it ends at any time in the near future. I know the city would like to get it done, and behind them, we believe that many of the things that have been in the newspaper that people have seen as being argued as being illegal will actually be found to be perfectly legal. I have a very hard time imagining that things like these green stormwater strategies like trees and bioswales and so on are going to be found to be illegal. The Environmental Protection Agency, the federal regulator that the city has to answer to, advocates for exactly these strategies on its website because they're cheaper, greener, and get multiple benefits.
And Portland is a role model nationally for green infrastructure.
Exactly. So, exactly, which is ironic given that 20-some years ago I sat on the committee that considered how to go about doing the big pipe. And at that time we were arguing, we want more green, we want more green. EPA said, no, we don't trust your information, you've got to do the big pipe. We did it. Now, 20 years later, they're saying, you know, you guys had some great ideas. You've done enough work out there on the ground and done enough good monitoring that you can demonstrate the efficacy of using green infrastructure. So we've come a long ways in that regard.
Well, actually, we're just about out of time today, but I'm just one plan ahead. Before this goes, once this is on the ballot, then I'd have to have you guys on opposite John DiLorenzo or somebody. But until it's an actual initiative, we could maybe do an update on this sometime in the spring and see how things are going.
Yeah, that would be great. And I just had one last thing, and that is, I think, one of the saddest aspects of this is you do see this frustration out there, people saying, we have nothing to lose. We have an incredible amount to lose. People come from all over the world, literally all over the world, to see what we're doing on the environment in Portland. There's a lot more that we could be doing, and we're out there fighting for that every day. But we have an incredible amount to lose, and to just turn it over to big industrial polluters is exactly the wrong solution.
And next month, I'm going to have Mark Griswold Wilson on, and we're going to talk about, we'll talk about invasive species in general in public areas, but we'll also talk about the purple loosestrife in Oaks Bottom. And I think we'll be tying in some of the reasons why the whole plan to kind of renaturalize Oaks Bottom has been on hold for the last couple of years, and it ties into all of this. I want to thank you very much for joining us, Mike and Bob. It's always good to have you on, and we'll talk again maybe in about 6 months.
All right.
So I've been talking with Mike Houck with the Urban Green Spaces Institute and Bob Salinger with the Audubon Society of Portland, and you've been listening to Locus Focus here on KBOO Community Radio. If you're just tuning in and you'd like to hear what you missed or you want your friends or family to hear this show, you can listen to it online or download the audio later this afternoon on our website, kboo.fm/locusfocus, and hopefully there'll be some live links to Mike's and Bob's web pages and other information about this initiative. Next week, we're going to be talking with Tony Juniper, who's author of What Has Nature Ever Done For Us, and will be in the middle of our pledge drive, and that book will be one of the things you can get if you become a member of KBOO next week. My engineer is Sam. I'm Barbara Bernstein. We're going to go out with some music by Abby Lincoln. Thanks for listening.
From way up high, abstracted natural bio-relief withers from the sky. Clouds that cast a single shadow, drifting, moving on the ground, creating an illusion as the world goes round. Geometric grace, circle, square, sometimes triangle, ruled with lines in space, waterways and craggy mountains. It's an action of repeat, active doing, active saying something bitter, something sweet. Acts of light that keep occurring, ghosts appearing through the sound.
In response to requests from listeners, KABU will make a program change at 4 p.m. each weekday. Starting on Monday, October 7th, we will air the Tom Hartman Show from 4 to 5 p.m. on a trial basis for 3 months. We are interested in your responses to this change. Please call 503-231-8032 to express your opinion or email program@kboo.org. You can continue to hear Democracy Now! On KABU each morning at 7 a.m.
KABU's fall membership drive starts on the 10th, and you could help make reaching our fundraising goal a little easier by offering a matching donation of at least $500 for us to use on air during the drive. Matching money is a really great motivator to entice our non-contributing listeners to donate, so please email membership@kboo.org if you would like to sign up or have any questions. Or just call 503-231-8032 and ask for the membership department to plan your fall drive matching gift today.
Dada, dada, dada day. Thursday, Thursday. Come one, come all to the Clinton Street Theater this Thursday for an evening of Dada film and music. We'll be playing surrealist silent films and cartoons, and the soundtrack will be provided by you, the audience. So bring your favorite musical instrument, kitchen implement, speak and spell, tantric bell, hotkeys, or tchotchkes to the Clinton Street Theater, Southeast Clinton and 26th Avenue in Portland, this Thursday, October 10th at 7 p.m. Tickets available at brownpapertickets.com. All proceeds benefit your community radio station, KBOO. Thursday, Dada, Clinton Street, KABU.
At least the haggis arrived at a reasonable hour.
How I'd love to wander back.
Hi there, this is writer Christy, host of